Would you take your Bibles and turn with me to the Old Testament book of Proverbs? If you don't know where to find it, it's pretty close to the middle of your Bible, right after the book of Psalms. The book of Proverbs. Proverbs chapter 1 and verse 1. Says, the Proverbs of Solomon, the son of David, king of Israel. Now, this book of Proverbs is the third book of what we call the poetical books. The poetical books are Job, Psalms, Proverbs, Ecclesiastes, and the Song of Solomon. And we've worked our way from Genesis through this third poetical book, the book of Proverbs. So we had better review these books and trust you get them in mind, and you ought to read through them once or twice a week. And get them firmly fixed in your memory so you can find those Old Testament books. Now let's begin with Genesis and say them right through. Put your heart into it and we'll go all the way through in order from the book of Genesis all together. Genesis, Exodus, Leviticus, Numbers, Deuteronomy, Joshua, Judges, Ruth, 1st and 2nd Samuel, 1st and 2nd Kings, 1st and 2nd Chronicles, Ezra, Nehemiah, Esther, Job, Psalms, Proverbs. There we are, the book of Proverbs. Now, as I said, this is one of those poetical books. And again, poetry doesn't always just have verses that rhyme with each other, particularly when you translate them from one language into another. But there are several devices, a good many devices that are used to make the ideas rhyme. To make the ideas correspond to each other in one way or another. And let me show you several devices that are used in this book of poetry. For instance, there is the device of repetition. That is, letting the second line say the same thing the first line did, only a little bit differently. In other words, saying the same thing in two different ways. Repetition. Look at chapter 2, verse 10. Chapter 2, verse 10, repetition. When wisdom entereth into thine heart, that's one line, and knowledge is pleasant unto thy soul, that's just another way of saying about the same thing in different words. Verse 11, discretion shall preserve thee, understanding shall keep thee. Discretion preserve thee, understanding keep thee. That's another way of saying the same thing, two different ways. And verse 12, to deliver thee from the way of the evil man, from the man that speaketh froward things. In other words, the evil man, the man who speaks froward things, same idea. So this is repetition where you say the same idea twice, only you say it a little bit differently the second time than you did the first time. And that's one of the devices that was used in this book of poetry to make it into Hebrew poetry. Then there's also the device of contrast. Turn over to chapter 16, verse 25. Contrast. The second line contrasts the first line. Notice verse 25. There is a way that seemeth right unto a man. Second line, but the end thereof is the way of death. Second line, contrast. Oh, here's the way it seems right. Wait a minute, that leads to destruction. See, the second line contrasts the first line. Look at chapter 17, verse 1 again. Chapter 17, verse 1. Better is a dry morsel and quietness therewith than a house full of sacrifices with strife. Here's, somebody, all he's got to eat is a little crust of bread. But everything's peaceful. It says that's better than all kinds of stuff to eat and everybody fighting with each other. The second line contrasts the first line. And so all through the book of Proverbs, there's all these different devices to make one line play against the other line. And that's what makes Hebrew poetry. Now, the title of this book, if you go back to chapter 1, verse 1, is the Proverbs. It says the Proverbs of Solomon. The word proverb is divided up into two pieces, P-R-O, pra, and verbs. Now, the word pra means for, and verb means a word. So a proverb is something for a word. What's really saying is here's a little saying that has a few words for many words. See, for a whole bunch of words, here's a little statement. And that's what a proverb is. A proverb is a small statement with a large truth. A proverb is a truth in a graphic way. Just something very wise said very simply in a way that will help you to remember it. That's a proverb. And so, excuse me. We know that proverbs are common in all languages. We have a lot of proverbs in this country. Didn't come from the Bible. Sometimes people think they do, you know. They're always saying, where's that verse that says the Lord helps those that help themselves? And they're always disappointed when I tell them that's not in the Bible. We have a lot of proverbs. A stitch in time saves nine. That's an old American proverb. Penny saved is a penny earned. Another one. Proverbs are common. But here in this book is a collection of the greatest proverbs, the greatest wisdom that's ever been assembled in this world. It says in verse 1 that these are the proverbs of Solomon, the son of David, king of Israel. We know that Solomon was the wisest man that ever lived. And here we find his wisdom as he, an older man, collected all these pieces of wisdom and put them down in this book and wrote them. Most all of the proverbs are written by Solomon, maybe a few by someone else. But Solomon was a wise man. Sometimes you will hear this book of Proverbs as referred to as some of the wisdom literature. Some books are called wisdom literature. They have a lot of wisdom in them. Ecclesiastes is one of those books of wisdom literature, and the book of Proverbs as well. Now, most of these books, as we come to them, I give you an outline of what the book is all about. Can't do that with the book of Proverbs. There just really isn't any real outline in the book of Proverbs. There are many of the scholars who try to make one in the book of Proverbs, and usually they will say, well, section 1 is wise sayings, and section 2 is more wise sayings, and section 3 is some additional wise saying. That's how they break it down into an outline. You have to really work hard to make an outline in the book of Proverbs. It doesn't really have one, but a book doesn't have to have an outline, you know. Dictionary is a pretty good book, but it doesn't have any outline, at least not that I could tell, but it's still a pretty good book. And the book of Proverbs is that kind of a book. Now, it is true that the first 9 chapters primarily deal with the subject of wisdom. And so we want to look at that. But wisdom isn't book learning. Wisdom isn't a degree from university somewhere. In God's A viewpoint, wisdom is what we'd call good sense. It's the wisdom to do right, the wisdom to live right, the wisdom to run your home and your business and your life the right way. And here is this book of Proverbs, which is a book which many a wise Christian businessman like to read one chapter of Proverbs every day. There's 31 chapters in the book, I guess it is, and they can read one chapter every day of the month. And it's a good book to do that with. But the first section is about wisdom. Notice it with me. Chapter 1, just a few sample passages here. Verse 5. It says, a wise man will hear and will increase learning, and a man of understanding shall attain unto wise counsels. It's telling us where to appreciate learning and try to learn more. I always get a little bit aggravated with people who don't want to learn anything. There's always things we ought to be learning. You're never too old to learn. And a wise man will always increase learning. Notice verse 7. The fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge, but fools despise wisdom and instruction. You see people who make fun of learning, make fun of wisdom, you mark it down, they're a fool. But wise people want to know, and the fear of the Lord is where all wisdom begins. When you fear God, that is, respect God, know that God knows what's right, that's when you start to learn. Chapter 2, verse 3. Yea, if thou criest after knowledge, and liftest up thy voice for understanding, if thou seekest her as silver, and searchest for her as for hid treasures, then shalt thou understand the fear of the Lord, and find the knowledge of God. Wisdom is something we ought to search for. Try to understand. Try to learn. Seek God's help in gaining knowledge and understanding. Chapter 3, verse 13. Happy is the man that findeth wisdom, and the man that getteth understanding. You want to be happy? You want to avoid doing things that don't make sense? Well, get wisdom and get understanding. Now, chapter 3, verse 19. See all the sections about wisdom here. Verse 19. The Lord, by wisdom, hath founded the earth. By understanding has He established the heavens. By His knowledge the depths are broken up and the clouds drop down the dew. Now, how is it that God was able to create the world and the universe and make the rain fall and the sunshine? And how could God do all those things? Well, He was smart enough to figure it out. He was smart enough, He had enough wisdom to understand. And by His power and His wisdom, He created this universe. Maybe someday He'll explain some of that to us. Chapter 4, verse 5. Get wisdom. Get understanding. Forget it not, neither decline from the words of my mouth. Forsake her not, and she shall preserve thee. Love her, and she shall keep thee. Wisdom is the principal thing. Therefore get wisdom, and with all thy getting, get understanding. The principal thing is not getting money. The principal thing is not getting famous. The principal thing is getting wisdom. Wisdom of God. Chapter 8, verse 1. Chapter 8, verse 1. Doth not wisdom cry? And understanding put forth her voice. Here is a picture, wisdom personified. And she's standing there inviting people to come and learn. Verse 2. She standeth in the top of high places, by the way, in the places of the paths. She crieth at the gates, at the entry of the city, at the coming in at the doors. Unto you, O men, I call, and my voice is to the sons of men. O ye simple, understand wisdom. And ye fools, be ye of an understanding heart. Verse 11, for wisdom is better than rubies, and all the things that may be desired are not to be compared to it. Wisdom, knowing how to live right and do your business right and run your home right, that's worth more than a whole stack of rubies and diamonds and gold bricks. Chapter 9, verse 10, the fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom, and the knowledge of the holy is understanding. For by me thy days shall be multiplied, and the years of thy life shall be increased. You know God and God's wisdom, and that will do you more good to give you longer life than anything, because you won't have to worry so much. You won't make so many dumb mistakes. You'll understand what's going on, and you'll live accordingly, and that will add years to your life. Well, the first nine chapters deal with wisdom. After that, go into various proverbs about many other subjects. It's amazing, the subjects. You could make a long list of all the subjects discussed in the book of Proverbs. Waste, laziness, immorality, drunkenness, women, practical jokes, money, ambition, fixing your fences, all kinds of subjects here. So, let's look at some of these interesting proverbs. Maybe if you're a Bible marker, which is a good thing to do if you have a Bible you want to mark, maybe you want to mark down some of these or underline or check some of these great proverbs because you'll want to refer to them again sometime. All right, let's just run through the book of Proverbs and notice some of the interesting proverbs here and there. Chapter 10, verse 4. Chapter 10, verse 4. Let's read it together, everybody. He becometh poor that dealeth with a slack hand, but the hand of the diligent maketh rich. Now, that's simple. If you are dealing with a slack, it's not talking about playing cards, but it's talking about if you are conducting your business with a slack hand, you're lazy, you're careless, you don't pay much attention to what you're doing, you don't do a good job, that tends to make you poor. But if you're diligent, if you're hardworking and ambitious, well, that's what makes you prosper. That's just plain old common good sense, but people need to pay attention to that. Chapter 11, verse 13. Chapter 11, verse 13. Read that verse with me all together. A talebearer revealeth secrets, but he that is of a faithful spirit concealeth the matter. Now, what do you do when you hear something exciting? Oh, let's run and tell somebody. Well, maybe that's going to hurt somebody. And maybe that's going to injure someone. Maybe that's going to hinder someone. It says a talebearer is always somebody running around telling everything they know. You don't have to tell everything you know. But he says the person who is a faithful spirit knows when to keep his mouth shut, knows when not to betray confidences, knows not to spread gossip, knows not to say things that are going to hurt somebody else. Well, that's a good proverb to remember. Chapter 11, verse 22. Well, this is a good one. Let's all read it together. Let's have all the ladies read it. Let's everybody read it together. All together, verse 22. As a jewel of gold in a swine's snout, so is a fair woman which is without discretion. Now, that's an interesting verse. Why is it that so many times it seems the most beautiful women are the ones who have the least amount of sense? Not talking about anybody here now, but that's the way it seems to be in the world. And maybe it's kind of like Christmas presents, you know. If you're going to buy somebody a new car for Christmas, they're not real fussy about how you wrap it, you know. But if you're going to give them a fruitcake, you want to wrap it up real nice. Well, the point is that maybe if a particular woman doesn't have too much sense, well, God wraps her up real nice, so she looks pretty anyhow. It says it's not right, it's not good when you have a fair or beautiful woman without good sense. That's like a pig wearing earrings. Make a pig beautiful. It's better to be a woman with good sense than to appear beautiful to the world. Chapter 11, verse 24. Chapter 11, verse 24. Let's read it together, everybody. There is that scattereth, and yet increaseth. And there is that withholdeth more than is meet, but it tendeth to poverty. Now that's maybe a little bit hard to understand, but here's a person who's generous. He takes some of his and sees somebody help, and he gives it to him. And there's a missionary, he gives some to him. And here's somebody that needs a little assistance, he gives something to him. And here's someone who needs a little help, he gives him a little time. And here's someone who needs some advice, he gives him some good advice. And he's always giving. And you say, boy, he's always so generous with his time and his energy and his money. He's going to run out. But lo and behold, instead of that, he gets more and more. And the other person hears somebody else, and he just hangs on to everything he's got. He won't share it with anybody. He won't help out anybody. He won't do anything for anybody. He's just tight and stingy and wants to hang on to it all, and lo and behold, he doesn't have very much. Well, it's the old principle, the more you sow, the more you reap. And if you don't sow very much, you don't reap very much. Generosity is a wonderful thing. Chapter 11, verse 30. Chapter 11, verse 30. Read it together. The fruit of the righteous is a tree of life, and he that winneth souls is wise. There's one of the great verses on soul winning, bringing other people to know Jesus Christ. To save someone by bringing the gospel to them so they can understand what it means to be saved and to be born again, and the Lord would convict their heart and show them that they're a sinner that needs salvation, and they trust in the Lord and are born again. You've won a soul. It says, he that wins souls is really wise. Now, there's the wisest thing I know that you can do. Go out and share the gospel with somebody, win someone to the Lord. Best investment of time and energy and money that there is. Chapter 12, verse 18. Chapter 12, verse 18. Read together with me now. Stay with me and all together. Let's read. There is that speaketh like the piercings of a sword, but the tongue of the wise is health. Now, you've heard of people who have a sharp tongue. That's what he's talking about here. People have a tongue that pierces like a sword. You know, some people always cut somebody. And their words are always so sharp. And they always just sound nasty when they talk. And they always hurt somebody. They say, oh, well, I'm being truthful. I'm being honest. I don't care if I hurt people, cut them all up, make them feel bad. Well, that's not the way it ought to be. Because he says in this verse that the tongue of the wise is health. If you're a wise person, with your tongue you will encourage people and build them up and help them and strengthen them and do things that will be a blessing to them. How do you use your tongue? What effect does your tongue have on other people? Does it cut them up or heal them up? Well, if you're wise, your tongue heals. What's it do to your husband or your wife? Does it cut them up and cut him down? Or does it build him or her up and bless and help them? Well, it depends on whether you're a wise person or a foolish one. Chapter 13, verse 10. Chapter 13, verse 10. Read with me. Only by pride cometh contention, but with the well advised is wisdom. Only by pride comes contention. Why do people fight? You know why people fight? Because of pride. Why do people argue? They argue because of pride. See, I want to prove that I'm right. I want to prove that I can argue you. I want to prove that my way is right and your way is wrong. And that's pride. If you were humble, nobody would fight with you. Ever think of that? And if people fight with you, it's because there's pride. Only. Notice what it says. Only by pride cometh contention. And every time you get in a fight, you remember, pride is what did it to you. It's your pride that caused it. How many times has your pride caused that this past week? Chapter 14, verse 9. Chapter 14, verse 9. Everyone? Fools make a mock at sin, but among the righteous there is favor. Now that's an interesting verse. I hope you mark that one down. Fools make a mock at sin. In other words, fools sit around and laugh at sin. Fools think sin is funny. And of course, in our society, the place where that applies most is the TV set. Do you sit in front of your TV and laugh at sin? Somebody makes an indecent remark and they roll the laugh track. And everybody's laughing, so you laugh along with them. What are you doing? You're laughing at sin. They make some comment or something about immorality. And they roll the laugh track and you laugh along with them. And God says you're a fool. Fools make a mock at sin. They use foul language and you laugh at it and say, oh, wasn't that funny? Fools make a mock at sin. And it's amazing how many people that call themselves Christians can sit around and get their entertainment by watching sin on the television. Now, sin is sin. It doesn't make any difference if it's play sin, real sin, or any other kind of sin. And fools make a mock at sin. Well, maybe you're classifying yourself as a fool. And you are if you sit around and laugh every evening at things that aren't right, and things that are unholy and ungodly and impure and immoral and indecent. If that's your source of entertainment, God says you're a fool. Fools make a mock at sin. Chapter 14, verse 12. Chapter 14, verse 12. Read it with me. There is a way which seemeth right unto a man, but the end thereof are the ways of death. Well, you know, when we set out to do something, it always seems like the right thing to do. Now, you always do what you think is best. You always do what you think is right. And you can give it a dozen good reasons why. A dozen excuses why. But maybe it isn't right. You see, what makes something right is not whether you think it's right, it's whether God says it's right or not. And you better know what God says about something before you do it. Because if it just seems right to you but it's wrong to God, the end of that is destruction and desolation. Chapter 14, verse 34. Chapter 14, verse 34. Everybody? Righteousness exalteth a nation, but sin is a reproach to any people. Oh, how all our politicians, government officials, ought to learn that verse. Righteousness exalts a nation. And it was righteousness, the righteousness of God's people in this country 150, 200, 100 years ago that made this a great nation and exalted this nation. The reason this nation became great and free and prosperous is because there were times in the past when this nation was based on Christian principles and people believed and obeyed the Word of God. I don't mean 100% everybody, but the leaders, the majority of the people, they believed and followed the Scriptures, and that's what made this nation great. But we don't have that anymore. And instead we have sin. And sin is a reproach to any people. And that's why our country's going down, down, down. And no group of politicians, or no group of laws, or no group of reforms is going to change it until people turn back to righteousness. Chapter 15, verse 1. Chapter 15, verse 1. Let's read it together. A soft answer turneth away wrath, but grievous words stir up anger. Now there's a good verse that solved most of your problems. Could eliminate most arguments in your home, if you have arguments in your home. Could eliminate arguments at work, if you have arguments at work. What do you have to do? A soft answer turns away wrath. You see, the inclination always is fight back, argue back, talk back, be as nasty as the other person, and louder if possible. That way we'll win the argument, we'll out-yell them or whatever. Really, you never win arguments. If you want to really win, just give a soft answer when the other person says something nasty or mean or unkind to you, and give a soft answer, and it'll all fizzle out. But if you fight back, grievous words will just stir up anger and make it worse. How do you respond when somebody isn't nice? Chapter 16, verse 7. Here's an interesting verse. This verse tells you how to get along with people too. Chapter 16, verse 7. Let's read. When a man's ways please the Lord, he maketh even his enemies to be at peace with him. Just live right. Please the Lord. Live the way the Lord wants you to live. And the world won't love you, but it will usually leave you alone anyway and respect you. And even your enemies will be at peace with you if you really live like the Lord wants you to live. Chapter 16, verse 18. 16:18. Let's read it. Pride goeth before destruction, and an haughty spirit before a fall. Oh, it's when you get all confident and proud and really stuck on yourself. Say, boy, I'm going to do this. Look what I've done. Look at the great things. That's when you're in for a downfall. That's what happened to Solomon. He got so great, then he fell into sin. That's what happened to Samson. He was so proud of his strength that he lost it all and became a blind slave. Now that's what happened to Belshazzar when he, or Nebuchadnezzar when he stood on the top of his palace walls and said, oh, look at great Babylon that I've built. And he lost his mind and was crazy and thought he was an animal for some time. That's what happened to Herod when he made this great speech and they said, oh, it's the voice of a god. And the Lord smote him with an awful disease and he died. That's what happened to Peter when Peter said, Lord, everybody else will forsake you. I never will. And that night he denied the Lord three times. And that's what happens to you too. You get lifted up in pride, and that's when you fall. Chapter 16, verse 32. Chapter 16, verse 32. Read it with me. He that is slow to anger is better than the mighty, and he that ruleth his spirit than he that taketh a city. Ruling your own spirit, we call that self-control. And it says if you have enough self-control to control your anger, you're better than some big, tough Olympic athlete. And if you are able to control your own self, you're better than somebody that has the strength to capture a city. You see, the greatest strength is self-control. That's why most pro athletes are weaklings. They may be able to hit a ball or kick one or something like that, but when it comes right down to it, they don't have the strength to keep their mouth shut and to act like they ought to act. Don't have the strength to control themselves. Chapter 17, verse 22. Here's a medical verse. 17:22. Read it with me. A merry heart doeth good like a medicine, but a broken spirit drieth the bones. Well, you know, attitude has more to do with your health than just about anything else. So I know you catch colds from germs and things like that, but a merry heart, having a cheerful attitude, being optimistic, thanking the Lord, rejoice in the Lord always. And again, I say rejoice. That kind of thinking, knowing that the Lord is with us and God's on our side and all things work together for good and God loves us and cares for us and gives us 1,000 things to rejoice in and 1,000 things to thank God for every day. That kind of attitude will keep you a whole lot healthier than if you go around moping and grumbling and complaining and whining and crying and feeling sorry for yourself and all that sort of thing. That'll run you into the grave. A merry heart does good like a medicine. A whole lot cheaper, too. Chapter 20. Verse 1. Chapter 20, verse 1. Everybody? Wine is a mocker. Strong drink is raging, and whosoever is deceived thereby is not wise. Oh, don't let drink deceive you. The world wants to do that. It will deceive you. Say, oh, this is wonderful, this is fun, this is the way to relax, this is the way to have a good time, and it'll lead you down to eventual ruined health and drunkenness and whatever else, poverty that goes along with it. You see, on the news the other day, they made a startling discovery, a profound observation after spending millions of dollars, probably government money, to figure this out. They decided that advertising beer on the sports commercials influences young people to drink. Well, what do you think they advertise for if they're not going to influence somebody to do it? That's what it's all about. That's what they spend millions of dollars for. But somebody wise figured that out now. Well, we shouldn't let it fool us. Wine is a mocker. It'll make a fool of you. It will ruin you. And if you're deceived by it, and yet there's a lot of people around, a lot of Christian people say, oh, well, it's okay to drink a little. We'll just drink wine or whatever else. But God says it's a mocker. It's raging. And if you let it deceive you, you're not very wise. How many people thought they were really being intelligent and doing it, ending up ruining their lives? Chapter 21, verse 1. Here's a great verse. Chapter 21, verse 1. Read it with me. The king's heart is in the hand of the Lord. As the rivers of water, he turneth it whithersoever he will. You know, that's an amazing thing. God can take that person, that contrary person, that important person, that ruling person, the king, the governor, the banker, anybody, and God can turn his heart around. God can change his mind about things. That's why you pray. Pray for God to do things, and God can take and turn somebody around. Turn it around just like turn the river to go a different direction. Chapter 21, verse 9. All you men, read this verse. All men, verse 9, together. It's better to dwell in a corner of the housetop than with a brawling woman in a wide house. Now, that says it's just better to live in the corner of the attic, if you can have peace and quiet, than in a big mansion with a brawling woman. Gives you a hard time all the time. Well, trust none of you ladies are like that. But, you know, it's amazing how many the women are like that in this world. How many people, you say, oh, look at those people, they live in that big fancy house. Yes, and they're miserable every minute, maybe. Well, if the home is not happy, there's misery everywhere. Chapter 21, verse 17. All together. He that loveth pleasure shall be a poor man. He that loveth wine and oil shall not be rich. How do you get poor and stay poor? Well, just live it up. Just put the emphasis on having a good time and going places and taking trips and having parties, and lo and behold, you'll spend all your money and you'll never have any. And that's why in this country people are so spoiled, and they wonder why they're broke all the time. Well, it's because they spend all the money. And most of the time people spend their money trying to have a good time, and lo and behold, they don't have a good time anyhow. Spending money doesn't make anybody happy. Spending money doesn't solve problems. I don't think spending money does any of those things. Chapter 22, verse 1. Chapter 22, verse 1. Together? A good name is rather to be chosen than great riches, and loving favor rather than silver and gold. You know, your reputation is worth a whole lot. And that's your greatest reputation. And be sure you live right so you keep it. That's worth a whole lot more than some money you might accumulate. Chapter 22, verses 24 and 25. Chapter 22, verses 24 and 25. Everybody? Make no friendship with an angry man, and with a furious man thou shalt not go, lest thou learn his ways and get a snare to thy soul. Don't hang around with people that are always getting mad, losing their temper, arguing and fighting. Hang around with them, pretty soon you'll be like them. Stay away from that kind of person. Chapter 23, verse 5. You're getting weak now as we go along. Maybe fall asleep by now, I don't know, but try and wake up and read it with me. Verse 5, everybody. Wilt thou set thine eyes upon that which is not? For riches certainly make themselves wings. They fly away as an eagle toward heaven. You wondered what happened to your checkbook last week? That's what happened to it. The riches all grew wings and flew away. Well, it says in that verse, don't set your eyes upon that which is nothing, you know. Don't say, oh, got some money in the bank. Now look there. Got $100 ahead this week. If car will break down next week, it'll be gone, you know. Just don't count on it. It just won't last. It'll go somewhere. And if nothing else happens, well, the tax man will get it. So just don't count on it. Don't put too much confidence in what you have stored up. Riches are pretty undependable. They come and go, mostly go. Chapter 23, verses 13 and 14. Chapter 23, verses 13 and 14. Let's read those two verses together. Everybody? Withhold not correction from the child, for if thou beatest him with the rod, he shall not die. Thou shalt beat him with the rod, and shalt deliver his soul from hell. Now, when it talks about beating with a rod, it doesn't mean child abuse. It doesn't mean taking a great big old club and beating them half to death. That's not the point. But it does mean that children need to get a spanking. And there's a lot of Christians who've swallowed the world's psychology, and they don't believe in spanking anymore. And if you have small children, you mark it down. If you have small children and you haven't given them a spanking in the last 2 weeks, it's probably because you don't believe the Bible. Because God says they need that. That's the correction. God also says you don't love your children if you don't spank them. You say, oh, well, I love my children, so I don't spank them. No, you don't love them, therefore you're ruining them. And that's not my idea. That's what God says. And if you think you're smarter than God, I've got news for you. You're not, and your children will be a mess. And they'll be ruined. Because children need to find out that they can't get by with sin. Children need to find out they have to obey their parents. And that's why God says in these two verses, don't withhold correction. Don't rob your children of the necessary matter of having a spanking when they need it. And most of them need it fairly often, especially when they're small. And if you don't do that, you're cheating your children. And you don't love your children, and you don't believe what God says. God says, you probably send your children to hell by not correcting them like you should, not spanking them like you ought to. And they'll be ruined for life. And it'll be your fault because you don't believe the Bible and don't believe what God says. You say, oh, but I read in a psychology book somewhere. That's what's ruined the country, the psychology book somewhere. And you better listen to what God has to say. Now, again, I'm not talking about abusing them, but giving them a good, proper spanking when they need it. Not just every time you get mad. That's not the point. But when they disobey and they need to be corrected, they're spanked the bottom. And that's the program. Chapter 25, verse 11. Here's a great little verse. Chapter 25, verse 11. Madeline likes this one. Let's read it together. A word fitly spoken is like apples of gold in pictures of silver. That's one of the most beautiful little verses in all the Bible. The right word, saying the right thing at the right time. A lot of us have a gift for saying the wrong thing at the wrong time, but to say the right thing at the right time, that's just a wonderful thing. Just that little thing that you could say that would encourage somebody, encourage a child, one of your children, encourage them to do better. Something that would lift somebody up when they're discouraged. Something that would just be a little help to somebody. A word fitly spoken is like apples of gold in pictures of silver. Chapter 25, verse 21 and 22. 21 and 22. Everybody? If thine enemy be hungry, give him bread to eat. And if he be thirsty, give him water to drink. For thou shalt heap coals of fire upon his head, and the Lord shall reward thee. What do you do when somebody treats you wrong? Get even, fight back, be just as mean and nasty as they're. No, that's not God's way, that's the world's way. God's way is you do something nice to them. And if your enemy's hungry, you give him something to eat. And if your enemy's thirsty, give him something to drink. And you make him ashamed of himself. Might even mend his ways. Might even straighten him out. And God's going to bless you for doing it. Chapter 26, verse 27. Here's a good verse. Chapter 26, verse 27. Read it. Whoso diggeth a pit shall fall therein, and he that rolleth a stone, it will return upon him. You go out and dig a pit, hope your neighbor's going to fall in it and break his leg because you're mad at him. You get up in the night to chase the dog and run out there in the yard and fall in the pit yourself. That's about the way it works. You know, you start to do something to hurt somebody else, and you're the one that's going to get hurt. It's going to hurt, do you more damage than will him. Chapter 27, verse 15. Chapter 27, verse 15. Everybody? A continual dropping in a very rainy day and a contentious woman are alike. Ever get a leak in your roof? You know? Or a dripping faucet, you know, in the night, and you can just hear the thing, and it gets louder and louder as the night goes on, drip, 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 and you say, oh, it can drive you crazy. Solomon, who was an expert on this subject, since he had 1,000 wives, some of them were good ones and some of them weren't, I'm sure, but he says, a contentious woman is just like that, you know, nag, 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 on and on. You women tell your husband what to do. You know, that's a dumb thing to do. A husband never listens when you tell him what to do anyhow. Ask him, don't tell him. Ask him to do it. Don't tell him to do it. You'll get more done that way. Chapter 29, verse 1. Chapter 29, verse 1. Do you have it there? All together? He that being often reproved hardeneth his neck shall suddenly be destroyed, and that without remedy. Hardens your neck. Say, no, I won't. I won't change. I won't turn around. You listen and God speaks to you. Do you listen when a wise person speaks to you? Do you listen when some Christian friend tells you you're making a mistake? Don't be stubborn. Don't harden your neck. Listen when somebody, when the Word of God or someone says something that's good and warns you. Don't be stubborn. Because if you do, you'll end up with a disaster on your hands. Well, now, all through these Proverbs, since Solomon said a lot of hard things about women, so that you wouldn't get the wrong idea, he ends by describing a good woman. And certainly there are many of them, many good women right here. In chapter 31, verse 10, who can find a virtuous woman? For her price is far above rubies. Oh, a good woman and a good wife is a wonderful thing. find one of them, you've got something worth more than a whole sack full of jewels. Verse 30. It says, favor is deceitful and beauty is vain, but a woman that feareth the Lord, she shall be praised. Give her of the fruit of her hands, and let her own works praise her in the gates.